Today's sponsor is Audible.com, who has more than 180,000 audiobooks and spoken word audio products. Get a free audiobook of your choice at www.audibletrial.com/shark. Welcome to the Movies, Films, and Flicks podcast. I'm your host, John Lossworth. Joining me, as always, is my co-host, Mark Hopmar.
Now, this is pure selfishness speaking, but I want The Rock and Sean William Scott to complete their trilogy of films together. So they've done Southland Tales and The Rundown. So they need another movie, like, you know, South and then Down. So, like, they need, like, to complete their South/Down trilogy.
Oh, okay. So some type of, maybe they can be in like a, oh wait, there's already a movie called The Descent.
What about 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea remake?
There you go.
This Rock is Nemo. He's remaking everything.
Yeah, why not? The Rock could be Nemo.
Sean William Scott could be a guy called Percy.
Sure. He looks like a Percy.
Yeah, he does. Sean William Scott does look like a Percy.
He's a Percy. He's got Percy written all over his face.
Yeah, and he's just like his, he's like, you know, the Sean William Scott character. Just real likable, capable, a little bumbling. You know, will fist fight an octopus.
He'll be like the most lovable Percy that's ever been on screen.
That's right. I don't, yeah, I mean, or we could call him Darcy.
Percy Darcy?
Sergeant Percy Darcy?
Sergeant Percy Darcy the third.
Wait, Sergeant Percy? Wait, Sergeant Percy Darcy? Wait, yeah. Darcy.
No, okay, how about Percy Dorsey? Percy Darcy Dorsey. Darcy is his middle name.
Sergeant Percy Dorsey Darcy the third?
Yes. Esquire.
Esquire.
Yes.
And where's Percy Darcy Dorsey the third Esquire at?
Just call him P. Oh man, I want to watch this movie.
That's a great character name. Percy Darcy Dorsey the third Esquire.
I think we just sold this movie.
Yeah, we're associate producers.
Oh man, our usual co-host John Livingood is currently off on another grand food tour, I think somewhere in South Florida.
Yeah, he literally just jumped on top of an alligator and just started eating it.
Yeah, yeah.
He didn't deep fry it. He just walked around with an alligator eating from it.
Yeah, it's kind of gross. Yeah. You don't know where that gator's been, but yeah. I guess he likes it fresh.
Do you think that would actually affect Livingood eating a whole gator?
No, it wouldn't.
No. I think he has Is he wearing a bib?
Like, his intestines are just made out of steel.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and he's probably squatting with it right now, too.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's probably, it's like a workout meal.
So he's squatting the gator to work up an appetite.
Yep.
Then once he's done.
Yeah, he eats it. And he's doing drop sets. So he'll, like, do 10, he'll eat some of it and lose some weight on it. Like, it's like dropping off 5 pounds. And then he'll do more. So he's doing drop sets.
Genius.
With the alligator.
Have you ever had gator before?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's a weird taste.
Like, yeah, like, it's just, it's perfectly inoffensible.
Like, it does taste like chicken, as cliche as that sounds. But, like, mm-hmm. There's, like, kind of, like, this fishy kind of quality to it that's just, like, very off-putting a little bit.
If you told me, like, that it tastes like chicken, I would agree. But if you said it tastes exactly like chicken, I would disagree.
Yeah. I don't know. It's weird. Because, like, you ever had, like, any other reptiles, like frog or something like that?
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of the same thing. Like, it's a little bit like chicken, but, like, kind of some fish thrown in there. And it's just like, ugh.
You know how there's, like, faux turkey? Like, this is, like, faux chicken. But it's just other animals.
Sure, sure.
Well, St. Pete did have the grouper problem for a while.
Oh, with the fake grouper?
Yeah, tilapia was being served instead.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I don't know. It's just grouper, tilapia, gator. It's all the same.
Yeah.
When you fry it, when you deep fry it and just dip it in a whole bunch of ranch.
Yeah, a grouper sandwich is just loaded with a ton of stuff.
Sure, sure.
Like, I couldn't tell the difference.
I think I've had grouper like a handful of times in my life, which sounds terrible, I know, being a native Floridian, but like, I don't know. Like, it's good, but it's not like, I don't really know what the fuss is about.
Would you hang out with somebody who knew the difference between tilapia and grouper?
I think I might have, without knowing.
Yeah. I'd be kind of annoyed if they knew about it.
It's like, well, I hate to burst your bubble, but that grouper sandwich is actually tilapia, so.
All right, Percy, Darcy, Dorsey the Third, Esquire.
Okay. I think now is a good time to start the podcast like we usually do with a listener question, Mark.
Yeah. And Megan tweeted this. My wife, she tweeted this to us because she just wanted to know the question. She joined us last week on the podcast. She wanted to know what movies from high school still hold up.
You mean like what movies that got released when we were in high school?
Yeah, so I was 98 to 01. 97 to 01.
I was 99 to 03. Right.
I mean, there's a lot. That wasn't that long ago. But there's one movie, John, that I think has really got – there's a lot of movies I still love. But Office Space.
Yeah. I mean, that still holds up.
Because it holds up because when I was, I don't know, 16, 17 watching it, it was funny, right? And then when I got in my 20s, it was funnier for a different reason. And then when I joined the workforce and I became a salty old – you know, POS, it became even funnier.
Yeah.
Like, I legit, like, on my desk today, like, I came back from a trip, work trip. I came back and my stapler wasn't on my desk. And I was like, where the hell is my stapler? Like, someone took my stapler.
Your red swing line stapler.
And they brought it back to me later and I had to fix it.
Sure.
So they brought it back to me broken.
Oh, man.
Right. So then I just all I could do was think about the movie and just I don't know. I just keep on thinking the older you get, the more you sort of appreciate about that film.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's true for like a lot of Mike Judge movies, though.
Yeah, you're right. Except for Extraction. I was thinking about Extraction the other day.
Oh, was that the one with Bateman and Kunis?
Yeah, he was just such an unlikable character. Bateman was.
Yeah, I mean, he was trying to cheat on his wife, right?
Yeah, and like, correctly. Yeah, and like he worked all day. Then his wife comes home, and she like he's like, oh, once she puts on the jogging pants, I'm not like getting laid. So then he just goes to the bar and leaves her. Like, no wonder you're not having fun with, you know, like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
he was just kind of like, I don't know. There's nothing really likable about him. But you watch like Idiocracy, and he's just like a normal, earnest dude. You watch Office Space, and he's not a bad guy. He just had kind of he was just sort of like a drone. But yeah, in Extraction and like even the Silicon Valley guys, like there's likable things about them, but he was just not likable. And you're supposed to like that character that you're living in this world with, you know?
Yeah. It's
So I'm gonna say what movies from college that didn't hold up in Extraction.
Sure, sure. So for me, when I was in high school, I guess like the big movies that were kind of really like stand out to me during my time in high school were the Lord of the Rings movies.
Oh yeah.
So what, Fellowship of the Ring that came out in
01.
Yeah. And then, you know, you had one every year till like about 2003, and that was the year I graduated high school. And do those movies still hold up?
Oh, of course.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's actually kind of unfair, but like, hey, that's when I was in high school. Right?
And you probably watched them a lot because you were a projectionist with me at AMC.
Those are the movies because it was like my first job, and I remember thinking how cool it was that I got to watch these epic movies and got paid for it. Like it was just like those movies always stand out to me just for that specific personal reason.
Remember when they tried to train me in projection and I said no, but I was like, I'll shut down the projectors at the end of the night.
You didn't want the responsibility.
Yeah, I didn't. And it was boring up there, and it was hot.
If something went wrong, like, everybody it's looked at me. You. Yeah.
If I miss some popcorn, you know, no one's going to care. But if I blow up a reel of film, I would just shut down the projectors. And then Fellowship was there, and I just would watch, like, the last 45 minutes of Fellowship almost every night when I closed down the projector.
Sure, sure. It was, Yeah, I think those were the defining movies for my high school experience. Like, nothing was bigger than those movies.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
So I skipped school to go buy Fight Club on DVD my junior year of high school at Target.
Nice.
I still have the DVD. But when I was younger, I thought Fight Club was, like, the greatest thing ever. But now that I'm kind of older, like, I still like it a lot, but I'm not as into it as I was when I was in my teens.
So it's a very – Fight Club is a very angsty, kind of testosterone-fueled movie. I think it works best when you're just kind of – when you're just kind of a young, angry dude just full of piss and vinegar. Like, that's – like, you're the target audience.
Yeah, now I'm just full of – well, I'm still full of both of those.
Yeah. It's just, I think when you get older, you just mellow out, right? It's just
– yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like every heavy metal band, you know, like their first couple albums are just like, you know, totally like thrashing and just hardcore. But then, like, you know, they release like, you know, their really mellow stuff. And I'm just like, huh.
Are you talking about Sugar Ray?
Yeah. I'm trying to look up like a non-Lord of the Rings movie from the time that I was in high school. American Pie that came out my freshman year.
I think holds up, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of those, like, teenage sex romp classics. That'll never go away.
I still love Snatched. I saw that my senior year of high school. I think that still holds up.
Yeah, yeah.
Gladiator?
Oh, yeah.
That was 2000.
Okay, here's an interesting one. This one came out my graduation year. School of Rock. You think that still holds up?
You know what's weird? I remember loving that movie. Like, I saw it in the theater a couple of times, owned the DVD. But now when I think about it, I don't really know if I like it. But if I watched it, I'd probably like it again.
It's a very nice movie. You know?
Yeah.
It's, I mean, just not too much bad stuff you can say about it, but that's not necessarily a compliment. You know?
Yeah.
It's just like, it definitely hits like your traditional kind of underdog kind of story beats, you know,
mm-hmm.
where kind of like the dude, who needs to get his like shit together, like, becomes like kind of like the, kind of like a role model for like these wayward kids. Then at the end, they just like all come together at the end. Like it's a story we've seen before, and School of Rock doesn't mess that story up.
Yeah. That's a good, I don't know why I have such like a negative viewpoint of it. It's Linkletter. It's music. It's great music.
Yeah. It's it's a good movie, but it's not something you necessarily recommend. You know?
You gotta watch School of Rock.
Okay. Oh, like, oh, okay, I get it.
What movies like don't hold up for me?
What's that?
Like The Net. But that was my middle school years.
I mean, like that's kind of for like obvious reasons, like because technology is just not the same
yeah.
anymore.
You know what movie holds up? The Mummy.
Oh, Brendan Fraser?
Deep Blue Sea.
There you go.
You know, Lake Placid? When we were working at AMC Tyrone 6, Jose Canseco came to watch a movie, but his passes weren't valid for that night, so we went and watched Lake Placid for the second time.
Someone said Jose Canseco, like, hey, you can't watch this. He was like, all right.
So we watched Lake Placid twice, and Macho Man went to watch Spider-Man by himself when I was working there.
Nice.
Yeah.
Rest in peace. You know, actually, I'm kind of looking through this list. Like, some really good comedies came out after I graduated.
You graduated right at...
Yeah, Borat came out like a couple years afterwards. Like a lot of the Judd Apatow, Seth Rogen, Jonah Hill type movies, like they all came out like as soon as I graduated high school.
Dude, I'm looking at 2000 right now. Almost Famous, Gladiator, Requiem for a Dream. That's a movie you only watch once. American Psycho, Memento, Snatch, Unbreakable. X-Men, you watch it now and you're like, ooh.
Yeah, I mean, you watch it just to get to the second one. That's the only reason to watch X-Men 1.
Best in show still told. Yeah, the second one's amazing. But you know what? You know what's weird? I used to like absolutely adore High Fidelity, but now I watch it as like a, you know, 34-year-old married dude. And I'm hearing Cusack just kind of bitch about stuff. And I'm kind of like, all right, Cusack.
It just sounds whiny.
And I get over yourself, bruh.
It's just like when you're like a teenager, it's just like everything he says, like it's totally like enlightening. But when you get older, it's just like you realize how whiny he is.
Yeah. Get over yourself. And you know what doesn't hold up? Hollow Man.
Really? I thought that was like one of your favorite movies.
I mean, it's really gross. I don't know. But yeah, so I don't know. Coyote Ugly?
Coyote Ugly. Yeah.
I'm just throwing out movies now.
Harold and Kumar, like that came out like after I graduated. Eternal Sunshine.
Ooh, that one still holds up.
Like, yeah, all these great movies. Like, it came out after I graduated high school. Like, huh.
What about Donnie Darko?
I mean, I wasn't really a big fan even back when I was in high school.
So I watched it in like 02, and I had a dial-up modem of computer, and I immediately went to read Roger Ebert's review after watching the movie.
Yeah.
I'm like, what just happened to me? Yeah.
Did you also go to Ain't Cool News like right afterwards to just kind of...
Yeah. Dude, that's when it was huge. I was like scouring everything I could find. There wasn't much on the web back then for Donnie Darko.
Well, there wasn't much on the web, period, back then. Yeah,
true.
Kids these days, they have no idea what their apps and their... And their Facebooks or whatever.
Get out of here, kids, these days.
I think that's the final answer. Get out of here, you kids.
Leave me alone.
Sure. All right. That does it for listener questions for now. I think we have another one coming up. It's time to move on to the topic of the day. Mark, do you want to introduce it?
Yeah. So tonight we're going to talk about It Comes at Night and Occasionally in the Morning and Sometimes Between 2 and 6 p.m.
Oh, twice on Sundays.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's really unpredictable when it comes.
It'll come.
Will come.
It just you won't know.
Actually, in the form of this movie, it will come.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it doesn't really matter when.
As long as it comes.
It doesn't have to be day or night, though.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I liked about It Follows, because it follows. It should just be It Comes. Like, but obviously people like us would be like, hey. Like, it'll get you.
Sure. How about that one?
it'll get you.
Oh, I'm coming for you.
I'm going to get you.
Just give me a minute.
Yeah, you don't know when.
Yeah.
Could be on Sunday, Monday.
But not Tuesday, because I got a doctor's appointment.
Yeah. If I get out early, potentially Wednesday. Thursday's bowling.
Yeah. Definitely Friday.
Yeah.
Definitely Friday.
Okay. Yeah. What comes up this weekend? Yeah, I got an AC/DC concert.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but I'll get you. You're not going anywhere.
Mm-mm.
You are staying in one spot. I got all the time in the world. spoilers, big time spoilers, guys. So if you haven't watched It Comes at Night, which I recommend you do, it's not long, hour and a half film. Go check it out. Come back, listen to this podcast, because we are going to spoil everything.
Spoil. Like a fridge that's been unplugged.
We're going to go to your house and open up your refrigerators.
Yeah. You know what's funny is that I don't think there was like too much stuff to spoil in this movie, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, there's no backstory. There's no conclusion. There's no resolution. Well, there's no answers.
I guess we should just... why don't we just run down the plot real quick?
You want to do it?
Sure. So the movie takes place in a... It's implied to be some type of post-apocalyptic setting, right? The movie opens in the house of Joel Edgerton's family. He has a wife, a child. The movie opens with what I presume to be the grandfather dying. I guess there's some type of virus that makes people sick, which caused an apocalyptic setting. You know, you would never be able to tell, like, just by looking at the scenery. Like, everything is just, like, so green and lush. I'm just like, you know, but I guess there's, like, a virus killing humans. I don't know. They never really say. But basically, it's just a family that's just trying to survive this post-apocalypse by holding up in this beautiful kind of huge two-story wooden cabin in the middle of the woods. Right? And yeah. So they're just surviving until, you know, one night you have an intruder who is also just trying to survive. And apparently he has a family, and they decide to just have the family move in with them. And, you know, things kind of hit the fan.
It comes.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I liked? You were talking about the house, and I really like how you said that. Remember when we were talking about that movie Don't Breathe and how the camera, like, zooms around the house so you have a really great sense of place in Don't Breathe? Mm-hmm. In this film, it gives you nothing of the house.
Yeah, it's...
Like, it's huge. Remember when they stepped outside when they were chopping wood and you saw how big the house was?
I'm like, whoa, that's it's a pretty nice place.
Yeah, and in your head, you're like, I haven't seen any of this inside. So this house is like, there's no sense of place.
Well,
in this film,
like, a lot of the interior shots, like, they're at night. A lot of the lights are turned off. The windows are all boarded up, so it's hard to get like a sense of perspective. I think like the main, or like the most frequently occurring shot that's inside the house is in that hallway leading to that red door, right? So it's just kind of...
Yep.
It's kind of like kind of a claustrophobic kind of feel, which may or may not have been intentional, you know?
Yeah, the guy... So I've been reading a ton of interviews about this because I kind of Donnie Darko'd this.
Right.
The director... the director's, this is a second film. His name is Trey Edward Schultz. He hasn't given anybody answers on anything. And he said he was a big fan of Shining. But I feel like in The Shining, you had a pretty good sense of place in that hotel.
Oh, yeah. Kubrick definitely.
Because of the kid riding his bike around?
Kid riding the bike, the elevator with the blood. There was like that huge room where Jack was just like typing on the typewriter. Yeah, you definitely got like a sense of like scale, but so, it comes at night. It's just everything just feels so cramped and just kind of claustrophobic.
Yeah, and like that confused me more. I'm like, wait, he's mentioning The Shining, which has a pretty good sense of place, and then he's giving us nothing about his house.
Hmm.
Right?
It makes me think it might be intentional.
Yeah.
You know, because like, there's this sense of isolationism that's going on because, like, you know, the family's kind of holding up in his house. But, like, you know, in that situation, like, I think anybody would start to feel kind of cooped up, a little cramped. Like, so maybe it was kind of intentional on the director's part. So,
and you know what? If you think about it, like, in my house, like, there's only certain rooms you go into.
Yeah, like, what, the kitchen? Right, I would assume.
we have a couple rooms we don't go into. So I guess in this film, there's a lot of places they don't explore, which is normal for any household.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I think that's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, so, you know, the movie deals with... it's, you know what's funny? It's like this movie is marketed as a horror movie, and it just... It was anything but... You know, it was more of a suspense.
Yeah, it was more of like a, have you seen Take Shelter or Melancholia?
No.
Now, I think, so Take Shelter is easily one of my top five films of the 21st century. I think it's absolutely beautiful. And I think this movie has a lot of parallels, really great gas mask work, protecting your family, essentially. And then Melancholia, Lars von Trier uses like this phantom camera for these beautiful slow motion shots. It's about like depression and the end of the world. And, you know, it could be a metaphor or it could be not. Like it's about kind of like the end of days when this thing's about to hit Earth in Melancholia. So I don't think it, I don't, but those aren't horror films. Those are like family drama thrillers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like this is not a horror film. And those like nightmares the kids was having, like, I think he would maybe have those nightmares, but those were kind of misleading. But I think the whole movie, he wanted to be misleading.
Yeah, it's, you know, I just, there were like times throughout the movie where I felt like it didn't know what it wanted to be.
Yeah.
You know, like, does it want to be scary? Does it want to be suspense? Or does it just want to be like a drama?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I never got the sense that it was like, we had like a clear kind of focus on the direction of the movie.
And like, so Take Shelter, right? It's about this guy who Michael Shannon, whose mom was diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia around the same time that he's starting to have these symptoms. So he starts getting these visions of the end of the world. So all he wants to do is protect his family. He builds like this storm shelter. But he also goes and sees a psychiatrist. So he doesn't know if it's the end of the world or if, you know, he's starting to succumb to paranoid schizophrenia and have to be institutionalized and taken away from his family. Mm-hmm. So there's like, there's ambiguity, but there's also a story. You know, Melancholia revolved around, well, Melancholia and the end of the world and depression. But this film doesn't really have an aim. There's no theme to it. And I was reading this interview, I think it was Film School Rejects, where they're like, it's going to be debated for years to come. But I don't think there's really anything to debate in this film. I feel like it was very straightforward. Do you?
It was straightforward with the information that they provided, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like they held back on a lot of stuff intentionally.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just like, yeah, it's so weird, like trying to describe this movie. Cause like, I enjoyed this movie. I just want to make that clear.
Yeah.
But as to the reasons why I enjoyed the movie, like I still have a hard time like figuring out like what it is about this movie that just kind of throws me off, you know, like it's a slow burner. But I feel like there wasn't enough. There were definitely some scary parts, but I didn't know if that was supposed to be scary. Yeah, there was just like a lot of things about this movie that just like it still just kind of sticks in my mind. Like why did they make that decision, or why did they shoot it that way? You know.
Yeah. There were three scenes that stick with me is,
Well, actually, before we get to those three scenes, I think that would be a good time to take a break, right?
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
I'm going to forget them.
All right. We'll see you in a little bit.
Robert.
Mm-hmm.
John.
Yes.
Complete this sequence.
Mm-hmm.
Five.
Four.
Three.
Two.
One.
What are we doing?
Counting.
Counting. Yeah. Counting what?
Down.
Counting down what?
Everything?
Everything and anything.
Anything and everything?
That's right. The three of us, we count down from five down to one. Top five, everything and anything that you can think of. You want to know the top five shittiest bands? You want to know the top five movies? Listen, Shark Dropper Studios, sharkdropper.com.
Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks. Man, you remember that scene in Ace Ventura 2 when Ace is just kind of stuck in that mechanical rhino?
Yeah, he shoves himself out of the thing's butt.
Yeah, that's kind of how I'm feeling in the studio right now.
This one?
Like, Yeah, it's because it's like in the middle of summer in Florida in this really hot small room with like barely any ventilation. And it's just like, yeah, I'm getting to rhino level status here.
If you hear Lazvas squeezing his way out of somewhere, I'll just continue the pod by myself. It's a good thing Levengood's not doing those alligator squats in there anymore.
Oh, man. Just a curious little rhino.
I love when it's in the bone. It's in the bone.
It's one of the few comedy sequels that's actually funnier / better than the original, in my opinion.
Yeah, I love that movie. And you put that up on Facebook the other day, and I said Hot Shots Part 2.
Hot Shots Part 2, 22 Jump Street was... I feel like it's on par. I don't know if it's like better or funnier, but like it's definitely just as good.
I did not like it.
Really? You didn't like 22 Jump Street? Oh.
There are funny moments, but that one lady, the drug dealer lady, like her bit, everything she does is just so improv. It just feels so disingenuous.
It was just like, yeah, I mean, she was terrible, but like, I feel like there were like so many funny moments that kind of made up for it. Like,
dude, when Channing Tatum freaks out about him, Jonah Hill making out with,
no, sleeping,
or hooking up with Ice Cube's daughter.
Oh, actually, even like the scene before that. Like like the entire scene where they're like in the restaurant, Ice Cube is just freaking out.
And Ice Cube's in a giant ice cube.
I love the credit sequence for 22 Jump Street.
Oh yeah. And Wyatt Russell was good.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it wasn't like a perfect movie, but I feel like it's just as good as the original to me. I don't know. Anyway, that's probably like an hour podcast.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think we have another listener question to answer. Right, Mark?
Yep. Yep, and the question is from Tom, and it's pretty simple. He just said, hey, what's the best horror film of 2017 so far?
Actually, I haven't seen a lot of horror movies so far.
And I said Alien Covenant.
I think that's like the only one I've seen so far that qualifies as a horror movie.
Get Out is hands down the best.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, that is a wonderful film.
Sure.
So
I'm pretty sure there's like a lot of small movies, like indie horror movies that have come out that we just haven't seen because we're not John Levengood.
Yeah. Like Schmitsky's The Third.
Sure. I mean, you know what it is that like it's just a lot of horror movies, they don't really come out like before summer.
Yeah.
You know? It's usually like during the fall and winter where you get like a nice glut of horror movies.
Yeah, because I'm looking at a lot of these right now, and a lot of them haven't come out. Like there's the Bye Bye Man.
Yeah, I haven't even heard of that.
Yeah, no thanks. But I really don't think... Oh, wait. So what does Thrillist say? Well, I'll look at their list. But Get Out. From what I watched... I mean, Get Out's amazing.
Yeah.
And oh, you know what I did watch recently? The Girl with All the Gifts.
Was that a horror movie?
Oh, In the Void, too. Yeah, I mean, it's like a zombie. It's really hard to explain. But I watched it last night. And normally, you know, when you get home from work, I kind of pass out around 10. But I stayed up through the whole thing. Like it was really good. Gemma Arterton, Glenn Close, Patty Considine, Girl with All the Gifts. And it's on Amazon Prime. That was good. The Void was fun.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't mind seeing A Cure for Wellness.
Yeah, I wanted to see that too. I'm just gonna have to wait till it comes out on streaming.
Yeah, but I think the Black Coat's Daughter I hear is pretty good. We were gonna watch that the other night. Oh, Split.
Oh yeah, yeah. Duh.
I mean, that's a good one.
Yeah. I don't know. Like the first half of the year, like it's just not really like the horror movies haven't really gotten the gear yet. You know, I think when you get to fall, that's when like things like really get going, like horror movie wise. You know,
dude, there's a movie called The Devil's Candy with Ethan Embry.
The Devil's Candy.
Yeah, directed by the guy who did The Loved Ones, and Ethan Embry was in Cheap Thrills. That was amazing.
Right.
Oh, there's a movie called Prevenge. Raw. I heard Raw is really good. It's like a cannibal film.
Isn't it that French kind of art house horror movie?
Yeah, apparently where people are just vomiting in the theater. But yeah, Get Out's number one on Thrillist list. That's a pretty good list that they have here.
All right, so it's Get Out.
Yeah, Get Out.
Definitely not Alien Covenant.
No.
No.
That movie's so bad it got recorded. It got erased from everyone's memory.
Yeah. If you had to grade, like if 2017 ended right now, what would the horror movies, like what would you grade the horror movies so far? It's kind of, there's some really good ones, but so far it's just like.
B minus? But like Get Out's carrying pretty much. Well, yeah, B minus because Get Out. Split? But there's also that's really junky ones.
Like Alien.
Yeah, and then there's like been a few that like are in the theater that have just been real, real dumpskies. I'd say B minus so far.
Yeah.
And normally I'm like the horror guy. Normally, like, you know, John's the horror corner, but normally I watch like the obscure films and I tell him about it. So they're really like, there haven't been too many obscure ones for me to watch. I mean, The Void is good. I'd say B minus.
B minus so far.
Yeah.
Okay. That's not bad. I say we revisit this question like around fall, winter. You know?
Yeah, I'm gonna watch that Ethan Embry movie. I wanna watch Raw.
Yeah, I don't know if I wanna watch that.
Yeah, I don't wanna vomit all over the place.
Have you ever
No, never.
I was about to say, like, I think I knew someone who did vomit, but it wasn't because it's a movie.
That was Jeff. And that was Jeff at Movie Co.
Yeah.
And that was twice.
That was because he was drunk. It wasn't because of the movie.
Yeah, it was that was he did it twice.
Oh, Jeff. Yeah. Do you remember what the movies were?
Oh gosh. They weren't good.
Yeah.
And they were sequels. I want to think like a scary movie.
School of Rock.
Yeah. No, but he definitely puked during two films.
Oh,
in your theater.
Oh, thank you. Man. Yeah, I've never watched a movie that was just so gross it made me puke. And I've watched some pretty messed up stuff.
When I was working at Blair, when I was working at the movie theaters in 99, people were puking during Blair Witch.
Well, yeah, because that was like, that was a lot of people's first exposure to found footage movies. So
yeah.
It was just kind of a little disorienting for all that shaky cam stuff.
Yeah, just some nausea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is that the final answer? Just puke.
Just a little bit of nausea.
Jeff puking twice.
I do want to say, guys, if you're listening to this podcast, watch Cheap Thrills on Netflix.
Cheap Thrills.
Ethan Embry's in it. He's very good. It's a very good movie.
Sure. And if you're like me, who watches a lot of his Netflix on the computer, don't watch it on Chrome, because I guess the max resolution when you stream Netflix on Chrome is 720p.
Oh.
I did not know that this whole time.
You've been Chroming it?
Yeah. I use Chrome for everything.
You're like a war boy from Mad Max watching Netflix.
I guess you got to use like Internet Explorer or Safari to get like 1080p on Netflix. And I had no idea. The whole time, I thought I was watching in 1080p.
I thought Mozilla Firefox.
I don't know about Firefox. But that means I got to watch Stranger Things all over again in true 1080p.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I'm in.
Sure.
Skype me in. I'll watch it on mine. It'll be a lot less than that.
Yeah.
So then I'll have to watch it again.
Or maybe I could just watch it on my actual TV.
Smart.
Sure. I don't know. It's just more convenient for me to watch on my computer.
That's right. While you're at work.
Yeah. All right. I think it's time to get back to the topic of the day. It comes at night. I think when we last left off, Mark was about to list three scenes in particular that were... Actually, I'll let you pick it up because I totally forgot what those three scenes were about.
Does he know all three? So two of these moments come from this conversation that Joel Edgerton, Paul has with, what's the other character's name? Travis?
the son.
Oh no, Will.
Oh, Will. Yeah.
Yeah. So this guy Will and Paul are having this conversation. So earlier in the film, when Joel Edgerton is talking to Will, so when Paul is talking to Will, you find out that Will had a brother, and they were staying with his brother. But later in the film, they're having some E.H. Taylor bourbon, nice product placement, small batch, very good bottle, $40. That actually made me pretty happy to see that bottle of whiskey on the screen. But so Will already said he had a brother, but later on in the film, he's having a conversation with Joel Edgerton. He's like, yeah, I don't have a brother. That part really doesn't play any importance, but it proves the guy was lying. He saw that smoke.
Yeah.
So in the beginning, they burn a body and a lot of smoke. So he saw that. So what do you think about this guy's lies? What do you think about Will's lies?
So I don't think he was 100% telling the truth, but I do believe him in the important parts. Like, he was trying to protect his family. He was he wasn't there to just to murder them. Like, he was just trying to help his family survive. I never got like any malevolent kind of vibes from this guy, but he definitely wasn't telling the truth about everything.
Yeah,
you know, which is understandable in that situation. Like, you know, you don't know these people, even like if you're living with them now, like you're still kind of on guard.
Yeah,
you know, it's just like this whole kind of this tension that's just kind of permeating throughout like the house now.
You know? And what I thought was interesting is Joel Edgerton's character Paul was a history teacher. So he wasn't like a survivalist.
Yeah, but the thing is, how do we know Paul was telling the truth in that scene as well? Maybe he was just BSing himself, you know?
Oh.
I mean.
Interesting.
We don't really, I mean, maybe I missed something, but we don't really see like any concrete or substantial proof of who they were in their past. So it's just like, yeah, he says he's a history teacher, but, like, you don't really know. I mean, maybe. And plus, like, you know, how did he end up with his wife and, like, the son? Because obviously the son doesn't look like his son, you know? Yeah. So there's, like, and they never really talk about, like, how that situation came to be. Right.
Yeah, I like that though. That was kind of one of the core things, like the ambiguity there. And then I have another question. So in the film, Paul is taking Will to his family, and there's a shootout that happens. These two guys ambush them. Do you think those two guys were with Will?
I mean, who knows? Who knows? I mean, Will was beating up with that one guy, but like, you know, how do you know he wasn't just like just doing something really clever and just be like, I'm just like, this guy's dead. I might as well just like, just beat him now or something. You know, it's just like, yeah, there's like another scene where there's just like kind of ambiguity built on top of more ambiguity.
Yeah.
What's that joke from Lethal Weapon? He was like a puzzle wrapped in a riddle.
In an enigma.
Yeah. That describes this whole movie. I'm just like, huh. Oh man.
Yeah, and you know what's weird, though? At the end, none of those questions matter.
No, it's just because they all end up dying.
Yeah.
it's like, well, it doesn't matter, right?
So. Now, they never show Will and Kim's, so the younger couple who comes in to live with them, they never, towards the end, this kid starts crying and never show his face. That kid was sick.
I mean, I want to say he was, but we can't 100% say for sure that he was.
But why wouldn't they show his face and be like, "Yeah, we're cool"?
It's just again, they just wanted to be like kind of vague about it. I'm just like, well, we won't give him like a definite answer here, so we'll just make it even more irritating to the audience.
Like, how annoying! Hey, Laz, how you doing?
I don't know.
So, you want to head out later?
I don't know.
Wait, so are we going to hang out?
I don't know. You tell me.
Right? Like, wait, what do you mean? Like, it's but you know, it was really well shot. It was very, really beautifully atmospheric.
You know, it was kind of like, it had like this eerie kind of tranquility about it. You know, I know it's like a post-apocalyptic setting, but it was just like, it was actually kind of just, it was actually very calming to watch like a lot of these kind of scenes where nothing really anything happened.
Yeah.
You know, it was just like, oh, I'm just really enjoying the scenery here.
Who killed the dog?
Who knows?
Was the dog killed or did the plague kill it?
I think they mentioned the dog got sick, but I mean, I don't know. And also, who really opened that door?
Yeah, that kid was sleepwalking.
Yeah, but the thing is, like Will mentioned, like, no, he's not tall enough to reach the doorknob. You know?
Yeah. He's not going to want to get his son sick.
Sure, sure. I mean, yeah, again, even more kind of unanswered questions that are brought up.
This movie is basically like, so you have 2 + 2 = 4. This movie is 2 + blank = blank.
It's like, okay.
So you have 2, but you don't know the rest.
It was just like, I mean, I really enjoyed watching this movie. It's it was grossly kind of mismarketed.
Yeah.
But like, it was one of the better movies I've seen in 2017, so I'm happy I've watched it. But at the same time, it's just like, oh, it's just like there's this kind of sense of dissatisfaction with the movie because it's just like, I mean, I don't want my hand to be held when I'm watching like a movie, right? Like it's nice when I can connect the dots on my own, but it's like when they don't give you enough dots to connect, it becomes a little frustrating, right?
There's basically one dot.
Yeah. And it's just like, there's one dot, so you have to figure out how it all connects. What does it connect to? You got to figure it out.
And you know what, though? It all feels like a little smug, maybe, on part of the director, but never once was I annoyed. When I walked out of the theater, though, I had zero, like, deep thoughts.
You know, like, I enjoyed the movie throughout, from beginning to end. Like, yeah. It wasn't.
But when you walked out, did you go, I need the answers?
No, that's the funny thing. Like, I was just like, I was very satisfied. But it wasn't until I got home and I was like thinking about it. I was like, wait a minute. Why did they do that? And they're just like, that's when I realized there were just like these gaping holes that were just like, that the movie just kind of glossed over. I'm just like, wait a minute. Yeah. I think it's interesting because like, another movie that came out last year that was also kind of vague, but I think felt like did a better job of being vague was 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Yeah.
Because that movie, it definitely didn't hold your hand either. There was a lot of things that were just kind of vague or left unanswered, but I feel like it never felt unsatisfying. The vagueness. Like it felt like a smart movie where it didn't want to hold your hand, but it gave you just enough info to just kind of just second guess everything, and it never felt frustrating. This movie, it feels like it fell short of that. Like it just didn't give you enough, you know? It's like, I don't want the movie to hold my hand, yeah, but like, no. I wouldn't mind like one or two more hints or something, you know?
Yeah. And the only thing that I like 10 Cloverfield Lane more, but the one thing I did like is 10 Cloverfield Lane wasted a whole bunch of scotch whiskey.
Oh, yeah.
And in this film, they really cherish their bourbon.
Oh, yeah. You notice how Paul just like took the bottle with him.
Yeah. just like... I mean, that's E.H. Taylor small batch. That's like a good bottle he has.
Yeah. What did you think about the ending?
I mean, the kid got sick. The other kid got sick. Yeah. Some things happened. A family got killed.
It felt super abrupt. I'm just
Why didn't they just let them leave?
I don't know.
Because of food?
I guess. I don't know.
I mean, they were scared of Paul, I think.
I mean, that's understandable. right?
Yeah. You know what's kind of weird is how he kind of marginalized his wife.
I mean, his wife was the one making the decisions, right?
Oh yeah.
It was her. It was her decision where she was like, "Well, the guy knows where the house is. Like, we have to bring his family, move the family in with us now, right? It's like the best decision, right?
Yeah.
So it wasn't like she wasn't like the kind of the wife or the distressed wife where like she took like a backseat to the husband. Like she definitely had like an equal place, like with her husband. So
yeah, maybe she was just kind of chill.
Yeah, yeah. You know what's I wanted to bring up a point real quick before we get to the end of the podcast. But so this is a movie that was made by A24.
Oh yeah.
another movie that came out, I think like last year, a year or two ago, was The Witch, also made by A24. And like It Comes at Night, it was marketed as a horror movie, but it didn't really turn out to be like a horror movie. It was more like kind of a twisted coming of age story, really.
Yeah.
And like throughout the whole movie, I kept thinking about The Witch, because like this movie had a lot of parallels, right? I mean, aside from the misleading marketing, right? I think you had like a lot of similar themes. So there's the theme of isolationism, right? You have like this family trying to survive on their own, like outside of society that they're trying to avoid. There's kind of like this kind of tortured kind of father figure trying to keep the family together. There's the theme of like the woods, like being scary and like just not wanting to go out. There's also a dog that runs away in both movies.
Yeah.
Right. I found myself like thinking about The Witch a lot in this movie. And you know what's funny is that like I went back and I read a couple articles. Apparently the goat that was used to play Black Phillip in The Witch was also in this movie.
Wait, really?
Yeah, yeah. I guess the Black Phillip goat, he was in this movie.
Wow.
I don't think it was like I don't think the creator was like, oh, we'll have like a cameo by Black Phillip. I think it was just like a production coincidence. Like they just used like the same goat handler or something. But just like, oh, that's pretty funny. It's like a kind of like a unintentional cinematic universe.
You know what I was just looking through? A24 is really crushing it with movies. Like they did Spring Breakers, which I know you love.
Yeah.
They did Spectacular Now, Under the Skin, which is brilliant. Lock, Enemy. They did Tusk, Son of a Most Violent Year, Ex Machina, Witch, End of the Tour, Slow West, Mississippi Grind, all really good movies. They did The Lobster, Green Room, Room, Blackcoat's Daughter. Well, I kind of want to watch that now. Swiss Army Man. Oh, Morris from America. Oh, American Honey. I keep going, ooh. But American Honey was really good. And that Riley Keough, who's in this movie, she was in American Honey. That's like a really good film. It's on Amazon Prime. Fire, which is one of my favorite movies of this year. Mm-hmm. They did Moonlight. Holy crap, dude. A24 is crushing it.
There should be like an A24 cinematic universe.
Oh.
So who would you have? have the Black Phillip goat.
Yeah.
You would have and
the zombie from Life After Beth.
Oh, you would have Daniel Radcliffe from Swiss Army Man.
Yeah. So you got zombies, dead bodies, goats. You have Scarlett Johansson's Alien from Under the Skin.
Oh, man.
You have the spiders from Enemy. You have the robot from Ex Machina. Oh my goodness. And you have...
that would be an amazing movie.
You have a lobster from The Lobster. And Patrick Stewart from Green Room.
Oh, yeah. They made Green Room.
Yeah. Have you watched Green Room yet?
Yeah. Yeah.
Have we talked about it? We haven't talked about it on the pod, have we?
I think we might have.
Yeah.
Or maybe casually mention it.
Yeah. But watch American Honey, dude. It's like 2 hours and 40 minutes long. But it's really good. And on Amazon Prime.
Sure. Sure. All right, Mark. Final thoughts on It Comes at Night.
I really liked it. I definitely had to read about it, but I had no big questions. I think it's a good work. I think it's really ambitious. And if you're a fan of maybe thrillers,
family dramas, gut-wrenching stuff, I totally recommend it.
It's an expertly made movie. It's a good movie. Like, you don't feel bad for watching it. Like, you didn't feel like you wasted your time. You're going to be left with a lot of questions. Maybe more than you would be comfortable with normally. But it's a slow burner of a movie, so don't expect like a lot of action or like any like really fast paced stuff. It's marketed as a horror movie, but it's not. I definitely recommend this movie, but there's gonna be like this huge urge to connect like a lot of dots, but the film's not gonna give it to me, like give you enough dots to connect. So you're gonna feel a little frustrated at that, but like don't let that distract you from how good this movie was. So
yeah, I'm very well made. Watch on Amazon Prime since it's on A24 when it comes out.
Yeah. All right. So I think we both liked it. All right. Before we sign off, are there any plugs you want to make, Mark?
Listen to all the Shark Jobber podcasts. Head to the site. Follow us on Twitter. Ask us questions. And go see. If you're in St. Petersburg, find a showing of Lazvath and go check out his improv.
Oh, thank you.
Dude's one of the best in the burg. He just overtook a guy named Springer to be the number one.
Don't worry. Springer won't be down for long. He's already plotting his comeback.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Don't worry. I'm keeping my head on swivel. All right. That does it for another excellent Movies, Films, and Flicks podcast from my co-host, Mark Hoffmeyer.
Yep.
John Lovegood, who's currently probably squatting a gator right now.
Yeah, he's probably like on his eighth drop set.
Sure.
Half the gators left.
He's finishing that up. Then he's going to get ready to deadlift a couple gators.
Yep. You know, they tried to pay him to go to the Everglades and eat all the pythons, but he's like, I got to get it through all the gators first.
Sure.
So,
sure.
You know.
I've been your host, John Lawson. Thank you so much for listening. Yeah. We'll see you guys later.
Target. T-minus 5 seconds till shark drop. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Drop the shark! Go! Go! Go!
This podcast is a Shark Dropper Studios production.